This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So the time has gone 9 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Let's focus our attention on the 27th of April, 2024. Exactly 30 years to the day of a pivotal moment in the history of South Africa. It was on this day, on the 27th of April 1994, that all South Africans, across the political divide, across the differences of race, culture, religion and creed, could stand one behind the other, waiting patiently to cast their vote. It was in 1994 where South Africans had universal suffrage, a right that people had enjoyed for close on to 200-300 years in other parts of the country. And if we add the gender dynamic, a right that women were given almost 100 years before. And yet in South Africa, it was the first time in 1994. And so the symbolism, the significance of the 27th of April is much deeper than just casting a vote. It's about human rights. It's about equality. It's about respect for people's choices. It's about citizenship and really feeling like being born in a country means you are of that country, especially when you've got a long ancestral line and lineage and heritage in the country. And all of those things came to fruition in that one moment in 1994. And so there's a lot of nostalgia around the 27th of April, and there possibly will be a lot of reflection about it tomorrow in the celebrations, commemorations for the day. The issue is, and this is where things get a little bit difficult, is once people have gotten over the awe, the wonder, the nostalgia, what kicks in? Because elections are periodic events that take place every 5 years. And so to that end, we can tick the box that South Africa has delivered on that promise of having elections every 5 years. Pretty well run, and a fair reflection of the will of the people. But democracy, many experts will tell you, is more than just casting a vote. Democracy is the lived experience of a human rights culture, social justice environment, every single day in between those elections. It is how people experience the state, the law, the government, public administration, safety and civil security, the schooling system and opportunities. That gives the democracy its quality and its essence. And so as people start to ask more questions around the promise of 1994 beyond the vote, it starts to become a more textured, layered, complex conversation about what democracy really means beyond the ballot. Sesmond Mokgoong is a political analyst and lecturer at the Northwest University. I know you're on the road and you are speaking to us whilst you're driving. I hope you're safe and I thank you for your time. And Ntate Mokgoong.
Hello, Rato. I'm doing the best. I'm on a speaker phone, so it's good to be with you again. Greetings to the listeners as well.
Thank you so much. So, you know, people will be reflecting on 30 years of democracy. What are the questions we really need to be asking about tomorrow?
Yeah, the aspect is what democracy means, as you are talking. Some people would want to say, is this democracy, or call it freedom? When we say you are free, are you free to make your choices? Typical liberal democracy assumptions of equality before the law, freedom of expression, freedom of conscience, and it is basically individual rights. And these have been codified in our constitution. So people want to say these are ideals, but are we experiencing them in practice? Really, are we living them out? I think this is what the most conversation about freedom in South Africa are about.
Okay. So, obviously, the 27th, fundamentally, in its simplest form, was the first day all South Africans who are eligible voters could cast a vote. And I remember that day clear as, you know, clear as crystal, says Mutlawong, is that to watch my adult parents, my mother and my father, cast a vote for the first time. My parents were so dear to me. Finally being given a right that they'd been denied. It was something so deeply, deeply, deeply meaningful and poignant for them. And for them to watch their own parents, those who were still alive, being able to cast a vote for the first time. You know, there was something, you know, quite exciting, but also quite sad and disturbing about that day as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the emotion that was attached with the first elections in 94, let's call them general, truly general elections, was that they were inclusive, allowing Africans to choose a government and the government that will be representative of all in the country, breaking away from a racialized political system and social relations. And people had this aspiration. They really knew what it feels to live under an authoritarian apartheid government when the police could really barge in your house without any notice and they treat you inhumanely. The big thing was the inhumane treatment that Africans, black people experienced. And their hope and expectation was, as we vote, we now have a political system that will protect us, that will recognize our worth, that will affirm our worth and improve our material conditions. This is what freedom is about. You as a rational person, you as a moral person, you as a worthy person, a dignified person who is worthy of dignity. And if you do not experience that, it demeans you. You are reduced to a subhuman level. I think this is why today you hear people in rural communities saying they have been treated like animals by virtue of going to a stream to fetch water next to a cow, next to a donkey, while it was said, this dispensation of democracy will give you access to water. And when that service is not extended to you and you are reduced to that subhuman existence, it becomes a betrayal. It becomes painful. So freedom is about affirming our worth. It's like you as a woman now, freedom is about you working, unlike your significant other saying, you shall stay home when I shall treat you. But you feel, okay, I can do more, man. You know, I can. And he says, no, dear, don't worry. You want 10 tower, you want 20 tower, I'll lock it in. When I just stay, you know, you are not fully alive.
Yeah.
So this is what freedom is about.
So it's about a system that infantilizes people. So we know our parents, our families, our communities to be made up of men and women of dignity, of aptitude, of intellect. And yet there was a political system that absolutely nullified their value until that moment, is what I'm hearing you say.
Lerato, that's a brief and an accurate summary. Extending it in that manner, I personally am aggrieved by what I perceive in the system as this dependency, systemic dependency that has been delivered by the political system, in that we will give you water, we'll give you electricity, we'll build a road for you. And if we are not building that road, we are not bringing that tap, when as a resident, you are complaining, or the abangtamanzi, so you have no water. And once you start doing something, there are communities where municipalities are not providing water. Once they touch that infrastructure and say, we can put a tap there, we can put a pipe there, using our own money, government says that is illegal, that is state infrastructure.
Yeah.
So the political system makes us depend on them for basic services. A road, if it has a pothole, we cannot fix it.
Okay.
If we fix it, they say, and then they still are not providing a service at that level.
Okay.
So we have been made to depend on a system that is not really effective as well.
So from what you're saying, just lamenting the failures on service delivery and, you know, how government often abuses its authority in this democracy is that, you know, we talk about a post-apartheid freedom democracy, but it feels in many ways like a resonance of that system, in that one system infantilized 80% of the population. The new system says you've got to vote, but you're still children in the eyes of the state, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, I think that is what the statist approach. I don't think we can enjoy freedom fully while we are still under this statist approach of service of administration. We want to now think about self-help, self-development. How do communities, Zone 13, Gosebukeng, how do they work as communities on their own to build themselves, to develop themselves? Government comes in as a facilitator, as a sponsor, as a supporter of that development. This is something Biko was even talking about when he's fighting for freedom, to say in communities, black communities, build your own clinic, build your own school, run your own school. While in the dispensation, that ethos and virtue has been taken away, and we enjoy freedom as expectant of what government should do. So I'm thinking, if we are to fully realize ourselves, we want to now imagine how could we work as a in a collaborative system, joining with local government for development. Currently, it's that development by helicopter, you know, it's top down, instead of really meaningfully engaging and including communities.
All right. Let's talk about the social justice aspect, because this is what you're now alluding to, is that, yes, on a day, you go and vote, 27th of April, 1994. But after you've cast your vote is where the democracy must kick in. And so if there's no water in the taps, there's no electricity in the socket, the roads are in disrepair, there aren't teachers in school, that vote almost is meaningless. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, definitely. People will now measure the taste of freedom based on government performance. If you are a government that said we're free, am I free when my child stays next to her school, Motlohong, but cannot be admitted there because they say this is African school and it has to drive 30 to 40 kilometers away? Or you are at a workplace, you feel as well that you are not really included. You are at a church. You, as a black person, can you go to an African church and you'll be welcome there, or multiracial church, and you feel you are equal at a workplace? Really, to what extent are we becoming one, becoming a community of equal human beings, of equal worth? I think these are the things that we want to see. But when government is not a champion and an advocate for this kind of freedom, then government begins to fail the community, and we become an uncivil society, because now I look at you, you are colored, I think you are not part of me. You are Zulu, you are not part of me. So at a social justice, it's how socioeconomic rights are being enjoyed by people. If those are failing, I think the people don't really embrace the freedom they have. I think it's a role of government and those activist organizations to really be meaningful in and intentional in how they advocate for a quality of life that is equal for all.
Okay. You use the word civility and then you link it to identity. So in many ways, democracy goes hand in hand with citizenship. Right? I know it's not unique and exclusive, but it goes hand in hand with citizenship. So you live in a country, you're born in a country, this is your country. That is why you have the right, the legal right to vote. And you should be enjoying a certain sense of belonging and social security. But then you don't, because of your race, because of your gender, because of your class, because of your tribe. Why is that problematic? Explain.
That is, we go to social theories. For example, in a democratic dispensation, the old classical theories of a social contract was, we as people will give authority to the state, and the state will deliver certain freedom. And as a citizen, I'm entitled. I know there are people who say, entitlement, you are too entitled, South Africans. But legally, you are entitled to a safe environment. Legally, if I clap you, Lerato, you cannot clap back. You have to go and lay a case of assault, and then the state must come and discipline me.
Sorry. You don't. Can I just me? I'm going to clap back, Sesman, but carry on. But you can carry on.
But vigilantism is not allowed. You cannot really retaliate and know execute the law yourself.
Yeah.
But when the state is failing at that, this is why we now have vigilante groups and or even private security now, because the state cannot ensure my security. It violates that contract.
Mm.
And as a citizen, if I feel there are certain basic necessities that accrue to me by being a citizen, and if they are not coming through, I don't identify with that. This is why in South Africa now, President Ramaphosa is saying, be patriotic, South Africans. But people ask, what are we proud about? What really? So these are the things. The state that is really effective, that is functional, would take a lead and guide, provide a political vision and an example on how you as a citizen become part of this community.
Okay.
And yes, you talk about citizenship, and those academics in the left who even talk about whenever South Africans complain that you are xenophobic, but citizenry is not isolating or excluding non-citizens, like you put correctly. If you are a non-citizen, you come into a certain political community legally and become part of that community. You are embraced. But at a basic value, the state should provide for its citizens. It is something that is expected.
Very briefly, can I ask you just to expand a little bit on what you're saying? So when I say, you know, citizenship goes hand in hand with democracy, but not exclusive, all I mean is you can't vote in an election of a country if you're not a citizen. That's as simple as that. But the democracy itself needs to protect all people, citizens and non-citizens.
This is what we call elements of majoritarianism. And maybe in we can call it, I forget the concept. It's more like dialogue, you know, where democracy is about dialogue, minority voices are allowed and are embraced, instead of saying, when we're a majority, we're South Africans, when you are not a citizen, shut up. Even if you are a citizen, you are defeated at the polls, shut up. It is not about that. So there has to be dialogue. And this dialogue includes you, who say you are a minority, you have been defeated at the polls. But what is your idea of an ideal society? What do you say is a good life? And we hear from you, and possibly those policies you propose, we implement because they are meaningful, they are rational, they make sense, they are admissible. So democracy is not about majoritarianism, Obawang Babisa dictatorship, majoritarian dictatorship. So it's not about the winner takes all. So it is that you have to speak. And if you have an opinion, you are allowed, you have a conscience, you have, even if that is ridiculous or controversial, you should be allowed to speak. You express your opinion. We should be heard.
Yeah. Okay. And then finally, let's wind the conversation down. What are the gains of the democracy? I've often expounded them on the show and said, I always use the example, because I remember it clear as day. I mean, I was a little girl in the 1980s, and I remember my mother wanting to buy her first car with her own money. Her own money. But a bank wouldn't give her the loan, either if she needed the signature of my father or a male figure, a grown woman with her own money. After 1994, that woman could buy not just her own car, but a house and anything else that she wanted. So the promise of 94 did deliver something, whether we're talking primary healthcare or more universal rights that people can be enjoyed. So what are the gains?
Yes, definitely it delivered, because at first, let's look at the liberal struggle, how churches were part of those that support the struggle for liberation. You could not be in a church and not be under monitoring by apartheid regime. Here we have churches that are so liberal, they begin to be out of order. This is how freedom has even enabled them. It can even be irresponsible freedom. And then we are talking here in the aspect of their education, how people can now be educated and state to support them massively, not to really exclude others or to put limitations on what career you will follow. We see, I think, I don't know if I was talking to you, I think it's you, when we're talking about corruption, yeah, this former speaker, or there are now women implicated in that.
Yes, it was you.
I think it's because the economy has opened up to that. So we see that empowerment. Really, there has been economic empowerment massively. There's been material improvements in terms of housing. It is something that we should not underestimate. RDP houses have been built for so many people. We know there are corruption issues, there are maladministration issues, but these have been allowed to us. We see a society that is welcoming of nationals, foreign nationals. We call it a poor border management, but it shows a democratic opening that is also humane in the sense that there are people in foreign countries where governments are brutal, the living conditions are brutal, and they can come to South Africa to take refuge here and to make a life for themselves here, what they cannot do in their home countries. This is a benefit that we see. Gwede Mantashe was saying, you complain about load shedding, but load shedding shows a success of how we've extended electricity to all. So in variety, we say, even ordinary listeners can observe themselves. There are certain gains that are really, really big despite those weaknesses. So we should really enjoy, for me, from political science, it's how we enjoy a multi-party democracy today. That you, as an opponent, Cyril Ramaphosa does not send somebody, go kidnap Malema, go put Malema under house arrest. You are competitive. We have free competition for power. And when they lose, they surrender that power. They don't hold on to it. This is a big achievement for us.
Okay. Thank you so much for giving us a measured view of elections, democracy, and freedom, which is all encompassed in the story of the 27th of April, 1994. Freedom Day, 30 years since that momentous occasion in South Africa. Something to be celebrated, commemorated, and reflected on tomorrow. News time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.